Welcome back to Meteorology Matters. Today we're going to track a different kind of storm system.
Oh.
Yeah, the turbulent relationship between social media and democracy.
Okay.
And before we get swept away, remember to follow meteorologist Rob Jones on Instagram, meteorologist on TikTok, TV meteorologist, and on YouTube, follow Rob Jones Hurricane, where you can also find the Meteorology Matters podcast playlist. So think of it this way. Social media trends, they're like powerful winds. They can really shift the climate of our democracy. And just like a sudden pressure drop, that hints at a storm coming, some changes in social media, they've created kind of a breeding ground for discord and distrust.
That's a really striking comparison, and it shows how these seemingly separate parts of our lives, they can actually intersect. There's this old story, the Tower of Babel, where people become so divided that they can't even understand each other. It's a really powerful metaphor for what some people see happening in America today. Social media, we thought it was going to bring us together, but it's become a modern day Tower of Babel. It's splitting us up into all these different factions, makes it harder to agree on even basic truths.
So instead of a global village, we've kind of got all these like isolated digital islands.
Exactly.
And the further they drift apart, the harder it is to build bridges between them.
Yeah, precisely. It's like we're all tuned into different weather channels, experiencing totally different realities. And this poses a huge challenge for democracy, because democracy needs shared facts, compromise, a basic level of trust.
And that trust, it seems like it's vanishing faster than rainwater in a desert.
Yeah, it is really troubling. If you think about the crucial ingredients of a healthy democracy, things like, social capital, robust institutions, shared narratives, social media, it seems to be weakening all of them in subtle but really important ways.
Okay, so let's break those down a little bit. What do you mean when you say social capital?
Okay.
How has social media changed that?
Okay, so social capital, that's like the glue that holds society together, the trust, the connections that allow us to work together and solve problems. But social media, it kind of pushes us to focus on appearances, superficial connections, instead of real relationships. We end up curating our online selves all the time, chasing likes and shares instead of real conversations. It's like a recipe for distrust, where we see other people not as fellow citizens, but as like
It's
rivals.
almost as if we forget that there's an actual person, like a real human with feelings
Exactly.
behind that profile picture.
Yeah, exactly. It makes it much easier to just, dismiss people or attack them when they think differently. And the algorithms, they just make it worse. They amplify all the outrage and anger, which then goes viral and just creates this feedback loop of negativity.
Yeah, it's like a wildfire online.
Spreading so fast. Misinformation, animosity, it's pretty alarming.
It is. And that brings us to the second thing, strong institutions.
Yeah.
The bedrock of society, the government, media, our education system, they all need public trust to work. But social media, all the misinformation, the outrage, it's chipped away at that trust. It breeds cynicism and doubt.
It's like a constant drip, drip, drip of negativity poisoning the well of public discourse.
Exactly. And it makes it really difficult for these institutions to address real problems and make good decisions. We're always questioning their motives, their expertise, their legitimacy. And that creates gridlock, dysfunction. It just gets harder and harder to make progress.
Okay, so what about that third pillar you mentioned? The shared narratives.
Shared narratives, those are the stories that bind us together as a nation. Our history, our values, our sense of who we are,
Right.
they give us common ground, but social media, it's fragmented that national narrative. It's
Yeah.
like we're all reading completely different history books,
Right.
watching different news channels, and we end up with totally different versions of reality.
Yeah.
That makes it really hard to find common ground
Right.
and agree on a shared vision for the future. We end up talking past each other, stuck in these echo chambers.
Yeah. Right.
That just reinforce our existing beliefs and make it even harder to bridge those divides.
Okay, so we've got this erosion of social capital, institutions kind of crumbling under pressure, and our shared national narrative shattered into a million pieces. That's a pretty bleak picture.
It is. It is.
Yeah.
But understanding how we got here, that's crucial.
Yeah.
You know, it's like some new weather pattern we've never seen before.
Yeah.
There's this concept called structural stupidity that I think might help us make sense of it all.
Structural stupidity. Okay, that sounds intriguing, but also a little unsettling.
Yeah, so think about an organization, right? Where everyone's afraid to speak up, challenge anything, offer a different perspective.
Maybe there's a culture of conformity, or people are afraid of what'll happen if they speak up.
Right.
Maybe there's just no trust in the leadership. The reason doesn't matter as much as what happens as a result. The organization just can't process information effectively anymore.
Right.
It can't adapt to change, can't make informed decisions, you know?
So they become stupid, in a sense.
In a sense, yeah. It's self-inflicted blindness.
Right.
Like a collective unwillingness to actually see things clearly.
Okay.
And how does this relate to social media? Think of social media as this massive dart gun, just constantly firing accusations and insults and threats.
Yeah.
It creates this atmosphere of fear where people are afraid to express themselves honestly for fear of being publicly shamed, canceled, whatever you want to call it.
Right. So it's like this digital muzzle.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And that's why structural stupidity is so dangerous.
Yeah.
When people are afraid to speak up, you know, bad ideas, they go unchallenged. Groupthink takes over and organizations just become ineffective. And this dynamic, it's not just on one side of the political spectrum. It plays out in different ways. But both the left and the right are vulnerable to it.
So you're saying that both sides, they're both falling into this structural stupidity trap.
Absolutely. And it's really interesting to see how this plays out differently, you know, based on their core narratives and values.
Okay.
Let's start with what some people call the devoted conservatives, you know. Their worldview, it often revolves around this narrative of fear, of threat. They see the world as this battle between good and evil. You know, patriots versus traitors.
Right. It's very much an us versus them mentality. Like any compromise is a sign of weakness.
Exactly. And this worldview, it can make them very vulnerable to things like conspiracy theories and misinformation.
Right.
Especially when those narratives, they feed into their existing beliefs and anxieties. You know, it's like they're trapped in this echo chamber of their own making, just constantly bombarded with information that confirms their biases, amplifies their fears.
Right.
And we've seen, you know, in recent years, this can lead to some pretty dangerous outcomes. The spread of all that misinformation about the 2020 election, the events of January 6th, those are really stark reminders of how easily misinformation spreads and how bad the consequences can be.
Yeah, that's a chilling example of how these online dynamics, they can really spill over into the real world and have real world consequences. But you mentioned that the left is not immune to this either.
Yeah, that's right. The progressive left, particularly the activist wing, they're often driven by this narrative of social justice and equality.
Right.
They see the world through the lens of power dynamics. You know,
yeah.
Where certain groups are privileged and others are marginalized.
It's a worldview that's rooted in compassion.
Yeah.
You know, a desire for a fairer society.
Yeah.
But I guess, like anything, it can have unintended consequences, too.
Exactly. This perspective, it can lead to this rigid ideological purity test where anyone who steps outside the accepted narrative is labeled, you know, heretic,
right,
a traitor to the cause.
It's almost like a digital witch hunt,
right,
where people are afraid to even slightly disagree for fear of being like ostracized.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And that creates this environment of intolerance and conformity.
Yeah.
Dissenting voices are silenced.
Right.
Critical thinking is stifled.
Yeah.
And bad ideas, they can take root and spread.
So we've got the left and the right. They're both caught in their own versions of structural stupidity, unable to really talk to each other or find common ground. That does feel like a recipe for disaster.
It's definitely a challenging situation. And to make things even more complex, there's this new threat that could make things exponentially worse.
Oh, no. What's that?
AI-generated disinformation.
AI-generated disinformation. That sounds like something straight out of a sci-fi movie.
I know, right? But it's becoming all too real. Artificial intelligence is advancing so rapidly, and it can now create these amazingly convincing fake news articles, social media posts, even videos.
So are you saying that we're going to be facing this like deluge of AI-generated propaganda and misinformation?
It's a real possibility. And this technology, it's only going to get more powerful, more accessible in the next few years.
Yeah.
It's a serious threat to our ability to even tell what's true and what's false, to
Right.
trust the information we see, and that makes it really hard to make informed decisions.
Yeah, it's like we're entering this new era of information warfare,
Right.
where it's hard to tell what's real and what's not.
Exactly. And the biggest target in this war is our democracy.
So what can we do? I mean, is there any way to navigate this?
Yeah.
Is there any hope at all?
There is hope, but it's going to take a collective effort,
Yeah.
a willingness to change how we behave and a commitment to making our democratic institutions stronger.
So where do we even begin? What can we actually do to protect our democracy?
Well, there are a few potential solutions, each with its own challenges and opportunities. But before we get into those, I think it's important to remember that even in the middle of all this, there is reason for optimism.
Okay, that's good to hear. What makes you hopeful?
Well, for one thing, awareness of the problem is growing. People are starting to see the negative effects of social media, both on themselves and on our democracy as a whole.
It's like we're finally waking up and realizing that this constant diet of outrage and misinformation is making us sick, individually and collectively.
Yeah, that's a great analogy. And that growing awareness is really important because it creates the possibility for dialogue, for critical thinking,
Right.
and ultimately for finding solutions.
So it's not all doom and gloom. We can still change course, reclaim our digital spaces, and rebuild trust.
Absolutely. But it's not going to be easy. It's going to take a lot of effort from all of us, individuals, organizations, our government institutions, to push back against these negative forces.
Okay, so what can we do as individuals? Like, what are some practical things we can do to protect ourselves and our communities?
Well, one of the most important things is to pay attention to our own social media use,
Okay, what does that mean, practically speaking?
It means like noticing how much time we spend online, what kind of content we're looking at, and how it makes us feel.
So being more mindful of our relationship with social media,
Yeah.
setting some boundaries.
Exactly. And we need to get better at discerning the information we see online.
You mean like figuring out what's true and what's not, spotting bias,
Exactly.
really looking at where the information is coming from?
Those skills are absolutely essential now in this age of misinformation and AI-generated
It's
stuff.
like we need to develop this internal BS detector,
Exactly.
a really good sense of skepticism to help us navigate all of this.
Right, but it's not just about being skeptical. It's
Yeah.
also about being open-minded, willing to consider different perspectives and actually seeking out information that challenges our own biases.
That sounds like a call for intellectual humility, admitting that we don't know everything and that
Exactly.
we can learn from others, even people we disagree with.
Exactly. And that leads to another really important point, the need for respectful dialogue,
Yeah.
even with those who see things differently.
Okay, respectful dialogue, that sounds great, but I mean, how it's so toxic online.
Yeah, it's definitely not easy, but it is possible. And it starts by remembering that the people on the other side of the screen, they're people too. They have their own thoughts, feelings, experiences that have made them who they are.
So remembering the human element.
Exactly. We're all in this together, even when we disagree. It's about building bridges, not walls, finding common ground, not just focusing on our differences.
Right, so being deliberate,
Yeah.
choosing to engage in a way that's, constructive
Yeah.
and respectful, even when it's hard.
Exactly. And remembering that our words have power both online and offline.
Right. I mean, they can hurt, they can heal, they can inspire, they can divide.
Exactly. So we need to choose them carefully, speak with kindness and empathy, and use our voices to promote understanding.
So it's not just what we say, but how we say it.
Precisely. And remember, even silence is a choice.
What do you mean silence is a choice?
I mean, we have a responsibility to speak up against injustice,
Oh, okay.
to defend the truth,
Right.
to stand up for what we believe in. We can't be passive bystanders in this information war. Our democracy needs us to participate, speak out, find solutions.
So being informed, engaged, proactive in protecting our democracy.
Exactly. We can't afford to be complacent. The stakes are too high.
It's a huge challenge, but it's also, inspiring. It's a reminder that we all have a role to play.
Absolutely. And it's a reminder that even in the face of all these challenges, there's always hope.
Right. Hope that we can get through this,
Yeah.
that we can reclaim our online spaces and build a better world for ourselves and future generations.
Exactly. And that hope is what keeps me going. It fuels my passion for this work and
Yeah.
gives me faith in the future.
It's a good reminder that even when things seem really difficult, we humans are resilient. We've got this capacity for hope.
Yeah.
And our commitment to democracy, it's unwavering.
That's what makes this work so important. We're fighting for the soul of our nation.
Yeah.
The values that define us, the yeah. future we want.
It's a fight worth having, a cause worth fighting for.
Absolutely. And it's a journey we need to take together.
And that's a really important point.
Yeah.
You know, we need to move beyond this me-first mentality.
Right.
And work together to solve these problems.
Exactly. We need to recognize that we're all connected.
Yeah.
That our actions affect other people, and that we all have a responsibility to build a better world.
Which brings us back to that idea of social capital. Mm. You know, the trust, the connections that hold us together as a society. Mm. So how do we rebuild those things?
It's a tough question. But it's not impossible. One surprisingly effective thing is to just disconnect from social media more often.
Disconnect. Mm-hmm. But isn't that how we stay connected? You know?
Yeah, to some extent.
To family, friends, stay informed about what's going on.
It is, but it's also a source of constant distraction, comparison, negativity.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
Taking a break from it, even for a little while, can help us reconnect with ourselves, our loved ones, our communities in a much more meaningful way.
Right. It's like hitting the reset button. Mm-hmm. You know, giving ourselves time to breathe, to reflect, to recharge.
That's a great way to put it. And when we do engage with social media, we can be more mindful about it, more intentional.
Okay. What does that look like? How do we become more intentional online?
Well, it means being choosy about who we follow, what we read, what conversations we join.
Right.
It means unfollowing those accounts that spread negativity or misinformation and looking for those that promote positivity, understanding, connection.
So curating our digital diets,
mm.
you know, choosing to feed ourselves information that lifts us up, that inspires us, rather than stuff that drains us and divides us.
Exactly. And remember, social media is a tool. It can be used for good or bad.
Right.
It all depends on us.
So it's not about demonizing social media, but about using it to make the world a better place.
Exactly. And one powerful way to do that is to connect with people who have different views.
Connect with people who disagree with us. Isn't that what's causing all this division?
It can be if we approach those interactions with hostility and judgment.
Yeah.
But it can also be a chance to learn, understand, connect.
So how do we bridge that gap?
Yeah.
How do we talk to people we disagree with without it turning into a fight?
Well, it's about approaching those conversations with curiosity.
Yeah.
A genuine desire to understand the other person's perspective.
Right.
Even if we don't agree with them in the end.
So building bridges instead of walls. You know, finding common ground instead of just focusing on what divides us.
That's the heart of it. It's challenging, but it's also really rewarding. And it's one of the most important things we can do.
Right.
To rebuild trust, to heal the divisions, to create a more just and equitable world.
So as we wrap up this conversation about social media and democracy, what's the one thing you want listeners to remember?
I think the most important thing to remember is this. We're not powerless. We have the power to choose how we use social media, how we consume information, how we interact with each other. We have the power to build a better world, both online and offline.
That's a powerful message, you know?
Yeah.
It gives people hope, reminds us that we have agency, that we can make a difference.
Exactly. And it's a reminder that the future of our democracy depends on us being active, speaking out, finding solutions.
So let's all be more mindful, more intentional, more engaged in making the world a better place, both online and in our everyday lives.
Absolutely. And let's ask ourselves some big questions, you know? What kind of world do we want? What kind of digital space do we want? And what kind of society do we want to leave behind?
Those are big questions, you know? They make us think, they challenge us to act, to imagine a better future.
Exactly. And those are the questions that will guide us as we move forward, as we navigate the challenges and opportunities of the digital age, and as we work to build a more just, equitable, and democratic society for everyone.
Well, thank you for joining us on Meteorology Matters.
Mm-hmm.
I know it was a bit of a different topic today, but I hope you found it thought-provoking. Until next time, stay curious, stay engaged, and stay hopeful.
It's about realizing that we're not just individuals. You know, we're part of this larger web of relationships and systems.
Right.
And understanding that can help us start to tackle some of these really big challenges, like, you know, making our democratic institutions stronger.
Yeah, you talked about hardening institutions earlier. What does that actually look like? How do we make these systems more resilient, you know, to the kinds of pressures we've been talking about?
Well, one promising approach is to reform our electoral system.
Okay, when you say reform, what kind of changes are you thinking about?
Well, one idea that's getting a lot of attention is moving away from closed party primaries.
So, for those who might not know, closed primaries mean that only voters registered with a specific party can vote in that party's primary. What's the problem with that system?
The problem is it often ends up favoring the most extreme candidates. You know, the ones who appeal to the party base but might not represent the majority of voters.
So the idea is to open up the primaries, let everyone vote,
Yeah.
regardless of their party.
Exactly. That way, candidates have to appeal to a broader range of voters, and that encourages moderation and compromise.
It sounds like that could help reduce the influence of the people who, who thrive on division and extreme rhetoric.
Exactly. That's the goal. Another reform that some people have suggested is ranked choice voting.
Okay, remind me how ranked choice voting works.
So, in a ranked choice system, voters rank the candidates in order of preference instead of just picking one. And this encourages candidates to try to build broader coalitions and appeal to a more diverse group of voters.
It sounds like it could make elections, I don't know, a little less divisive.
Yeah, that's the hope. And it's already being used in some places around the country, and the results seem promising.
Okay, so electoral reform is one way to strengthen institutions.
Yeah.
What other areas should we be looking at?
Oh, there are definitely others. Another area that could use some reform is how we choose the people who run our elections.
You mean the people who make sure elections are fair and accurate?
Exactly. Right now, those positions are often very political, which can make people question the whole electoral process.
So how do we make those positions less political?
Well, one idea is to create nonpartisan commissions,
Yeah,
to handle things like drawing electoral districts and choosing election officials.
taking the partisanship out of it. That makes sense. I mean, that could go a long way toward restoring people's confidence in elections.
Absolutely. And there are other reforms we could think about, like strengthening campaign finance laws, making the government more transparent, protecting whistleblowers.
Okay, so all of these reforms, it seems like the goal is to make institutions less vulnerable to, manipulation,
Yeah.
more accountable to the people, and more focused on the common good.
Exactly. We need a system that's not so easily swayed by the loudest voices, the most extreme viewpoints, and the most manipulative tactics.
It sounds like it's going to be a long, difficult process.
It will be. But it's important to remember we're not powerless,
Right.
There are things we can do, individually and together, to make our democracy stronger.
So what about social media itself? I mean, it feels so powerful, like this huge wave of information and misinformation we can't control. How do we even begin to address that?
Social media is incredibly powerful, but it's not completely beyond our influence. There are some reforms that could help lessen its negative effects without resorting to censorship.
Okay, so how do we reform social media without limiting free speech? That seems like a really difficult balance to strike.
It is a delicate balance, but I think it's possible. One idea is to find ways to slow down the spread of harmful content.
Slow it down without censoring it. I mean, isn't the point of social media to share information quickly?
Well, yes, but the problem is, right now, the algorithms are designed to amplify whatever's most engaging.
Right.
And that often means the most outrageous, divisive, emotionally charged stuff.
Okay.
It creates this sort of information arms race where the loudest, most extreme voices end up dominating.
It's like everyone's trying to shout louder than everyone else.
Yeah,
Right.
exactly. But what if we change the algorithms so they prioritize things that are more thoughtful, nuanced, things that encourage real dialogue?
So instead of rewarding like anger and division, we could reward thoughtfulness and civility.
Right, exactly. It's not about censoring anything. It's about creating a more level playing field.
Okay. What are some other ideas for reforming social media?
Well, another idea is to rethink the share function.
The button that lets you repost something to your followers.
Yeah, exactly. That one simple button has become this weapon of misinformation,
Right.
It lets lies and conspiracy theories spread incredibly fast.
So how do we change that without stopping people from sharing things they think are important?
Well, one idea is to just make it a little bit harder to share. Like, what if you had to copy and paste something instead of just hitting a button?
Right.
That would force people to pause for a second, think about what they're sharing.
It's like a speed bump,
Yeah.
to slow down the spread of misinformation.
Exactly. And there are other possibilities too, like requiring social media platforms to be more transparent about their algorithms,
Okay.
giving users more control over their data,
Yeah.
holding platforms accountable for the content they host.
Okay, so all of these reforms, the goal is to create a more responsible, accountable social media environment.
That's it. We need a digital public square that encourages real dialogue, critical thinking, and informed decisions.
That sounds like a pretty big challenge.
It is. And it's not just about the platforms themselves. It's also about preparing the next generation,
yeah.
you know,
yeah.
to handle this world.
Our kids, our grandkids. I mean, what can we do to help them deal with all of this?
Well, one of the most important things is to delay their exposure to social media.
Delay their exposure.
Yeah.
But social media is everywhere. How do we shield kids from it completely?
It's definitely not easy, but research has shown that too much social media can be harmful to kids, you know,
yeah.
to their mental health and development.
It's almost like it's addictive.
Yeah.
And potentially harmful,
yeah.
especially for young minds that are still developing.
Exactly. We need to treat social media like anything else that could be harmful.
Right.
And restrict access until kids are mature enough to handle it responsibly.
So when are kids ready? What's the magic age?
Well, there's no one-size-fits-all answer, but a lot of experts say we should wait until at least high school, maybe even later.
So no smartphones for elementary school kids, no social media until they're teenagers?
Mm-hmm.
A lot of parents are not going to like that.
I know, it's tough, but it's worth it. We need to put our kids' well-being first. And honestly, they'll be better off without all those distractions and pressures during those crucial years.
I can see that. What else can we do to prepare them?
Well, besides delaying their exposure, we need to teach them how to be critical thinkers, you know?
Right.
How to tell what's true from what's not.
Mm-hmm.
How to spot bias, how to evaluate sources.
Right, so they can, like, figure things out for themselves.
Exactly. Those skills are more important now than ever. And we also need to teach them how to disagree respectfully, you know?
Yeah.
How to have conversations without being mean.
Wow.
How to build relationships with people who are different from them.
So fostering empathy, tolerance, you know.
Exactly. Those are the skills that will help them navigate this world, build bridges instead of walls, and create a more just and equitable society.
Okay, so giving them the tools and the mindset to be responsible digital citizens.
Right.
Critical thinkers, compassionate people.
Exactly. And it's not just about school.
Yeah.
You know, it's also about the values we teach them at home.
Yeah.
The conversations we have, the example we set.
Right. So creating this culture of respect.
Yeah.
Curiosity, a love of learning, both online and in the real world.
That's a beautiful way to put it. And it's about holding on to hope, even in the middle of all these challenges.
You've painted a pretty bleak picture. I mean, what makes you hopeful?
You know, I am concerned about the challenges, but I also believe that we can change things.
Okay.
We can reclaim our digital spaces and we can build a stronger democracy.
Okay, that's good. What gives you that hope?
Well, like we talked about, people are becoming more aware of the problem. They're realizing that all this outrage and misinformation is bad for us as individuals and as a society.
It's like we're finally waking up from this bad dream.
Yeah, that's a good way to put it. And that awareness is the first step towards change. It opens the door for dialogue, reflection, and finding solutions.
So it's not all doom and gloom.
Definitely not.
We still have a chance to make things better.
Absolutely. But it's going to take a lot of effort from all of us.
So what can we do as individuals? I mean, what are some practical things to protect ourselves and our communities from all of this?
One of the most important things is to pay attention to how we use social media. You know?
Right. We talked about that before. But how do we actually do that?
Well, it means noticing how much time we spend online, what we're looking at, and how it makes us feel.
Okay. So being more aware of our relationship with social media, you know.
Exactly.
Setting boundaries.
Exactly. We also need to be more careful about the information we see online.
Right. So figuring out what's true and what's not.
Exactly.
Thinking critically about where information comes from.
Those are really crucial skills these days. And it's not just about being skeptical, you know.
Okay.
It's also about being open-minded.
Yeah.
Willing to consider different viewpoints and actually looking for information that challenges our own biases.
So being humble.
Yeah.
You know, admitting that we don't know everything, that we can learn from others, even people we disagree with.
Exactly. And that's closely connected to the need for respectful dialogue, even with people who see things differently.
Okay, respectful dialogue. Again, that sounds great in theory, but how do you actually do that? It feels like it's so hard online.
It's definitely not easy, but it is possible. It starts with remembering that the people we're interacting with online, they're real people.
Right.
With their own thoughts, feelings, experiences, mm-hmm. you know, things that have shaped who they are.
So remembering that they're human. just like us.
Exactly. We're all in this together, even when we disagree. So it's about building bridges, not walls.
Right.
Finding common ground, not just focusing on our differences.
Right. So choosing to engage in a way that's constructive,
yeah,
respectful, even when it's difficult.
Exactly. And remembering that our words have power, you know?
Right. They can hurt, they can heal, they can inspire.
Exactly. So we need to choose our words carefully. Speak with kindness and empathy. And use our voices to promote understanding and connection.
So it's not just what we say, it's how we say it.
Precisely. And remember, even choosing to stay silent is a choice.
What do you mean silence is a choice?
Well, I mean, we have a responsibility to speak out against things that are wrong, you know?
Right.
To defend what's true, to stand up for what we believe in. We can't just sit back and do nothing. The future of our democracy depends on us participating, speaking out, finding solutions.
So being informed, engaged, proactive.
Exactly. We can't be complacent. There's too much at stake.
You know, it's a big challenge.
Yeah.
But it's also inspiring in a way.
Yeah.
It's a reminder that we can make a difference.
Absolutely. And it's a reminder that even in the face of all this, there's hope.
Right. Hope that we can get through this, that we can reclaim our online spaces and build a better world for ourselves and future generations.
Exactly. And that hope is what keeps me going. You know, it keeps me passionate about this work and gives me faith in the future.
Yeah. It's a good reminder that we humans, we're resilient. You know,
yeah.
We've got this amazing capacity for hope.
Yeah, we do.
And our commitment to democracy, it's strong. It's not going anywhere.
That's what makes this work so important, you know?
Yeah.
It's about fighting for the soul of our nation.
Yes.
The values we believe in, the future we want.
It's a fight worth having, a cause worth fighting for.
Absolutely. And it's a journey we have to take together.
That's it, yeah.
Yeah.
It's about understanding that, you know, we're not just these isolated individuals. We're all part of this bigger picture.
Right.
And if we can get that, it can really help us face these huge challenges, like you mentioned, strengthening our democratic institutions.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, you talked about that earlier, hardening those institutions.
Yeah.
But what does that actually look like? I mean, how do we make those systems tougher, more resilient, able to withstand all these pressures?
Well, one really promising idea is reforming how our elections work.
Okay, so when you say reform,
yeah,
what kind of specific changes are we talking about?
Well, one thing that a lot of people are talking about is getting rid of closed party primaries.
Right. For those who might not be familiar with that term, closed primaries mean that you can only vote in a primary election if you're registered with that specific party. What's the issue with that?
The problem is that it tends to favor the most extreme candidates, the ones who appeal to the party base, but maybe not to the broader electorate.
So you're saying open up the primaries, let everyone vote, regardless of their party affiliation.
Exactly. That way, candidates have to appeal to a wider range of voters, which could lead to more moderation, more compromise.
It sounds like that could really help to reduce the influence of those who, you know, who just want to stir up division and use those really extreme talking points.
Exactly. That's the hope. Another idea that some people have suggested is ranked choice voting.
Okay, remind me how that works again.
Sure. So with ranked choice voting, you don't just pick one candidate. You rank them in order of your preference.
Okay.
This way, candidates are encouraged to try to build broader support, appeal to a more diverse group of people.
It sounds like it could lead to elections that are a bit less, I don't know, a bit less divisive.
That's the idea. And it's already being implemented in some parts of the country with some pretty promising results.
Okay, so we've got electoral reform as one way to strengthen institutions. What are some other areas that we should be focusing on?
Well, another really important one is how we choose the people who actually oversee our elections.
You mean the folks who are responsible for ensuring that our elections are conducted fairly and accurately?
Precisely. Right now, those positions are often very politicized, which, you know, understandably can undermine public trust in the process.
So how do we change that? How do we make those roles less political?
One idea is to establish nonpartisan commissions to handle things like, you know, drawing electoral districts and selecting those election officials.
So basically taking the partisan politics out of the equation.
Yeah.
That seems like it could really help to restore people's faith in the integrity of our elections.
It could, yeah. There are other reforms, too, like strengthening campaign finance laws, increasing transparency in government, protecting whistleblowers, things like that.
It sounds like all these reforms aim to make our institutions less vulnerable to, well, to manipulation,
mm-hmm.
more accountable to the people and more focused on the common good.
Exactly. We need a system that is more resilient, you know,
Right.
not so easily swayed by the loudest, most extreme voices or by those who are just trying to game the system for their own benefit.
It sounds like it's going to be a long and difficult process.
It will be, but it's important to remember that, you know, we're not completely helpless here. There are things we can do as individuals and together to really make a difference.
Okay, so what about social media itself? I mean, it just seems so big and powerful, this torrent of information, misinformation. How do we even begin to address that?
I hear you. It can feel overwhelming. But it's not entirely out of our control. There are things we can do to mitigate the negative effects without resorting to censorship.
Okay, so how do we reform social media without infringing on people's right to free speech? That seems like a really delicate balance to strike.
It is, but I think it's possible. One idea is to find ways to slow down the spread of harmful content.
Okay, slow it down, but not censor it. Isn't the whole point of social media to share information quickly and widely?
It is, but the algorithms are designed to amplify whatever content gets the most engagement. And that often means things that are, you know, outrageous, divisive, emotionally charged.
Right, so it becomes kind of a race to the bottom.
Yeah, sort of. It's like everyone's trying to shout the loudest, be the most outrageous. But what if we change the algorithms to actually favor content that's more thoughtful, more nuanced, that encourages real conversation and debate?
So instead of rewarding anger and division, we'd be rewarding thoughtfulness and civility.
Exactly. It's not about censoring specific viewpoints. It's about creating a more level playing field.
Okay, I like that. What are some other ideas?
Well, another one that's gaining traction is modifying the share function.
Oh, the button that allows you to just repost something to all your followers.
Yep, that's the one. And honestly, that little button has become this weapon of mass misinformation. Mm-hmm. It lets falsehoods and conspiracy theories spread like wildfire.
So how do we change that without limiting people's ability to share things they find interesting or important?
Well, one idea is to just add a little bit of friction to the process. Like, you know, what if instead of just clicking a button, you had to actually copy and paste the content you wanted to share? It wouldn't be a huge change, but it would force people to stop and think for a second about what they're spreading.
Right, like a little speed bump.
Yeah. Exactly. And there are other possibilities, too, like requiring platforms to be more transparent about their algorithms, giving users more control over their data, holding the platforms more accountable for the content they host.
All those sound like good steps towards creating a more responsible, accountable, and trustworthy social media environment.
Exactly. The goal is to create a digital space that encourages real dialogue, critical thinking, informed decisions, you know.
Right. A healthy public square, so to speak.
Yeah, that's a good way to put it. It's a big challenge, but I think it's an essential one if we want to preserve our democracy in the digital age. And it's not just about reforming these platforms themselves. It's also about preparing the next generation to handle this complex world they're inheriting.
So you're talking about our kids, grandkids. Mm-hmm. I mean, what can we do to equip them to handle all of this?
One of the most important things is to delay their exposure to social media.
Delay it? But it's so ingrained in our lives these days. I mean, how do you shield kids from it completely?
It's tough, I know. But the research is pretty clear. Too much social media can be harmful to kids' mental health and development.
Right. It's addictive and potentially really harmful, especially for young, developing minds.
Exactly. I think we need to start treating social media like we do any other potentially harmful substance. Limit access until kids are mature enough to handle it responsibly.
So what's the magic age? When are kids ready for social media?
You know, there's no easy answer to that. It depends on the individual kid. But many experts think we should wait at least until high school, maybe even later.
So no smartphones for elementary school kids. No social media accounts until they're teenagers. I feel like that's going to be a hard sell for a lot of parents.
It will be. But it's important. We need to put our kids' well-being first. Honestly, they'll be better off without all those distractions and pressures, especially during those crucial developmental years.
I see your point. What else can we do?
Along with delaying their exposure, we need to teach them how to be really critical consumers of information. You know?
You mean being able to tell what's true and what's not? Spotting bias? Evaluating sources, like we talked about earlier.
Exactly. Those skills are more important now than ever in this age of misinformation and AI-generated content. It's like giving them a toolkit to be able to sort through all the noise and find the truth.
Right. Giving them the skills to be like digital detectives.
Yeah, something like that. And we need to teach them how to disagree respectfully, how to have conversations without being mean or hurtful, how to build relationships with people who are different from them.
So fostering those qualities of Empathy, tolerance,
Yeah.
a willingness to listen to other perspectives.
Exactly. Those are the skills that will really empower them, to navigate this complex world, to build bridges instead of walls, to work toward a more just and equitable society.
Okay, so it's about giving them the tools and the mindset they need to be responsible digital citizens, to think critically, to be compassionate human beings.
Exactly. And that education, it goes beyond just formal schooling. It's also about the values we model for them at home, the conversations we have, the examples we set.
Right, so creating this culture of respect, curiosity, a love of learning.
I love that. Yeah. And it's about holding on to hope, even when things feel really tough.
I mean, you've painted a pretty bleak picture of the challenges we're up against. What gives you hope?
I am concerned, but I really do believe we have the power to change things for the better.
Okay, that's good to hear. What specifically gives you that hope?
Well, like we talked about earlier, awareness of the problem is growing. More and more people are starting to realize that this constant diet of outrage and misinformation, it's not good for us. It's not good for our society.
It's like we're finally starting to wake up and realize, where this path is leading us. And we're starting to say, no, this isn't what we want.
Yeah, exactly. And that awareness is essential. It's the first step towards real change. It opens the door for dialogue, for critical thinking, for finding solutions.
So it's not all doom and gloom. We still have a chance to change course.
We absolutely do. But it's going to take sustained effort from all of us, individuals, organizations, those working within our institutions. It's a collective effort.
Absolutely. Well, on that note, I think it's time to wrap up. This has been a really fascinating conversation. Thank you so much for joining us on Meteorology Matters. I know it was a bit of a departure from our usual weather discussions, but I hope everyone found it informative and thought-provoking. Until next time, stay curious, stay engaged, and stay hopeful.